For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Research from the UK suggests that about 70% of patients would like to record their consultations with their doctors. In Australia, what you can record, what consent you need, and who you can share the recording with largely depends on where you live. Dr. Megan Prichter is a lawyer and research fellow at the Melbourne Law School. She and her co-authors have written an overview of legal considerations around recordings of healthcare consultations. Megan is my guest today. Can patients record consultations? Is there a problem with that?
It depends. I think lawyers often say those words and Everyone goes, oh, really? Can't you just give us the real answer straight off the bat? It depends which state of Australia you're in. So what we found in our study was that the law varies between each state and territory of Australia. And We looked particularly at the laws that govern surveillance devices. So they're typically called the Surveillance Devices Act or the Listening Devices Act. And obviously those bits of law are designed to cover any type of listening device when it doesn't just cover using your smartphone to record a medical consultation.
Yes.
In some of the states, they have kind of a two-party consent approach. So both the doctor and the patient in our scenario would have to agree to the patient making a recording.
Okay.
And in a bunch of other states, there's only one party consent required. So if a patient intentionally takes their phone into the consultation and presses record, in fact, the doctor's consent isn't required in those states.
Do we know how many people want to record or do record in Australia?
We know that lots of people do want to record their conversations in Australia, but we don't have hard data on that.
Uh-huh.
We can extrapolate from a UK study that shows that about 70% of people in that study wanted to record their consultations, and about 15% had actually done that. The research that we did kicked off from the development of an app at the Victorian Comprehensive Cancer Centre here in Melbourne that was designed to enable and facilitate patients recording their consultations with their oncologists. And so that app itself was developed in response to a realisation that there was a real demand for it and that the Cancer Centre wanted to both facilitate that and kind of put some parameters around how it was done. In relation to how much patients remember about their what they've been told, there is pretty good evidence that we forget most of it. So evidence that we only remember about 20% of what we've been told in consultations. And consultation recording, I mean, it's been around internationally and in Australia for a long, long time as a practice and as an idea. And it very much is designed to pick up that problem of walking out of the consultation room and going, oh, what did the doctor say again about, you know, how I should take that medication or what the next steps were? It's particularly problematic in settings in which people are receiving, you know, difficult diagnoses, so that they might be very stressed or upset by what they're hearing about, you know, their health and not take anything else in beyond those words, you know, you have whatever the condition is.
So tell us about the Second Ears app. You started talking about it. It was developed for the Victorian Comprehensive Cancer Centre. What does it involve? Do you have to sign away your life in terms of consent and things like that?
So we at the law school worked with Amelia Hyatt, who was part of a group of researchers at the Cancer Centre that developed the Second Ears app. And some of the research around that app has been published elsewhere. But the app's still a prototype. It's been piloted, so it's not available for everybody to use at the moment. And the way it works is that patients can install it on their smartphone and take it into their consultation. We think that it's a really good idea that apps like that have very clear information and consent mechanisms built into them. So both the doctor and the patient know exactly what the expectations are around that recording. One of the good features, I think, of Second Ears is that the recording is uploaded to the patient's medical record and it's done so there's an authoritative copy of that recording on the hospital system and the patient can only access it themselves once that upload has happened.
Right.
So that is partly designed to deal with a bit of concern on the part of doctors about, you know, what's going to happen if I do allow recording. It's kind of a protective feature, I guess.
You talk in your paper about three types of recordings: overt patient-led recordings, over clinician-led recordings? Does that happen often?
Clinician-led recordings we don't know a heap about. It's possible that clinicians might want to record the consultation for their own listening back later to try and improve their communication style, to make sure they're covering off all of the information that they need to cover off before somebody agrees to surgery, for instance. So it's perfectly legitimate for a doctor to do that as a learning or quality improvement initiative, but we don't know how often that actually happens.
And the third type is the covert patient-led recordings that we've talked about. Are there penalties involved in not getting a doctor's consent for recording a consultation?
There could be penalties involved. As I said, it depends very much on which state of Australia you live in. So in Victoria, for instance, you don't need the doctor's consent. You can covertly record them. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend that people do that, and I'll talk about that more in a minute. But, there's no penalty for doing so. It's completely legitimate. In other states where the law requires that the doctor's consent is obtained, so South Australia is one of those states, Western mm-hmm. Australia is another one, so there are penalties attached to that if you do record without consent, and in the law they range up to a number of years in prison and wow. thousands of dollars in fines. The only case that I could find where a penalty had been levied for that kind of offence, it just resulted in an 18-month good behaviour bond. So I think the likelihood that you would be subject to a really severe penalty is fairly low, but it is available to the court.
I'm chatting today with Megan Prichter from the Melbourne Law School. Her co-authored article on overt and covert recordings of healthcare consultations is now available at mja.com.au. If you're enjoying this podcast, you can find all our episodes at mja.com.au/podcasts, or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes or Spotify. Back to our chat. If, my doctor and I agree that I can record a conversation, who can I share that with later?
So, again, it depends where you live.
Yep.
So in many places you can, as long as the original recording didn't break the law, so as long as you got consent if you lived somewhere where you needed to get consent, then generally speaking, you can share that with family and friends or with people who have a legitimate interest in you sharing that information, is how it's typically expressed in the law. So that's obviously going to depend on your individual circumstances. So
yes.
we've kind of said, well, probably with family and close friends who might be involved in, supporting you in your healthcare journey or giving you support around a diagnosis or your treatment, or, who you think really ought to know this information and to be able to offer advice, and support around it. Doctors have expressed concern about these recordings ending up on social media. So there is certainly a lot of anxiety around that. We're not really sure that anxiety is warranted. It doesn't seem like patients are surreptitiously recording doctors and then editing the recordings in ways that make them look bad and popping that on social media. But stranger things have happened. So again, that depends where you are, but in most states, the consent of the clinician for that sharing would be required before you could do it. West Australia goes so far as to prohibit that kind of sharing altogether.
What about the recording's admissibility in court? Say you're suing your doctor for whatever. Can you use those recordings legitimately as evidence?
So you can use recordings like that in court, even if the recording has been made without consent, where consent was needed. That recording would form part of the overall evidence about what was said during the consultation. And I imagine this would most typically be relevant during a medical negligence claim where a person said, well, I wouldn't have agreed to the surgery if I'd known X, Y, and Z. And the doctor says, well, I told you X, Y, and Z. The recording could be used as evidence of what the doctor said, but the notes would also be used as evidence and the recollection would also be used as evidence. So it would form a package of information that the court would consider.
Who owns the recordings?
So in terms of ownership, typically the health service will own a recording that they've made. A patient will own, you know, the smartphone that the recording is held on if they've made it. But the law doesn't typically think of information as something that actually can be owned. So it's quite a complex thing to say who owns the recording. Well, the hospital might own the servers that the audio recording's stored on, or the patient might own the phone that it's stored on.
Yes.
We prefer to talk about who has rights to do certain things with data, and that's where it comes back who can I share it with? Who can, you know, can I delete it? Yeah. Patient who records their consultation can do anything they like with that consultation in terms of they don't have to protect it, they don't have to hold on to it for a certain length of time. A health service or a clinician does have certain requirements that they have to adhere to, because a recording that is led by the health service or auspiced by them or that the doctor makes becomes part of the medical record of that patient. And so then a whole other set of laws apply, which require that the medical record is preserved for a certain period, typically 7 years, and that the hospital or the health service can do certain things with it, but they can't share it for any old purpose and they can't delete it before that time's up. It's really just for providing the patient with care, for improving the quality of the service, for defending a legal claim if something came to court and that sort of thing.
As you've said throughout this, it depends where you are and on that state's particular legislation. What would you like to see happen in terms of making this easier? How can the process be made simpler to understand and operate in?
I mean, the legislation, of course, is only one part of the picture. So much depends upon the doctor-patient relationship and the communication between the doctor and the patient. I'd love to see, as a lawyer, I'd love to see all of the states get their act into gear and line up their laws so that people, you know, have a much clearer sense of where they stand and it doesn't change if you move from South Australia to Victoria.
Yes, yeah.
So even in the absence of major legislative reform, there are things that we can put in place now to make the use of this new technology. And I have to say there's some really exciting technological developments, not just second ears, but there's some examples in the US where the recordings are automatically annotated using AI to highlight key words, and transcripts are provided and links to further information for the patient. So they're really trying to leverage a lot of value out of a simple recording, which is really good. I think, you know, as I perhaps alluded to earlier, consent's always a really good way to go. So I would encourage people not to record covertly, to just say to the doctor, you know, I'm finding it really hard to remember this information. Do you mind if I just record it? I'll only just listen back to it to myself, or I'll only just share it with my husband or my brother, and I won't be putting it on Facebook or anything. That conversation might be a bit tricky, I suppose, but I think it's better than being found out doing something that you haven't mentioned and recording covertly.
If only for the sake of your relationship with the doctor.
Exactly. And we anticipate that if there are circumstances in which if a covert recording was made and then was discovered, that that could lead to a complete breakdown of that therapeutic relationship and actually could mean that you have to go and find another doctor. Putting a positive light on it, try and have that conversation if you want to record. Many doctors would say yes. Some will ask you, you know, why, or is there some other way that I can give you more information? Can I give you written information instead if they're not comfortable being recorded? We would encourage people to have that conversation up front.
Is there any evidence that recording leads to more litigation against doctors?
So we don't have any evidence that it does. We don't really have any evidence that it doesn't, and certainly this is something that doctors are concerned about. It's important to remember that the existence of a recording doesn't change how the doctor delivered their care. So if a doctor has done something wrong, there's been a medical error, or they've failed to communicate information, then that's happened whether or not the recording was made. And so I suppose the recording adds, as I said, another bit of evidence to the package, but it doesn't mean that otherwise the doctor would get away with bad behaviour.
Thanks,
Megan. Good to talk to you.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.